Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Really pleased to welcome back Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. She specializes in horticulture education for our home gardeners and certainly works with the Master Gardener Program too, and always enjoy having her come by to talk with you and with me about what's going on outside, maybe what's going on inside with our flowers, and a bit about vegetable gardening, because there's things we can do. And probably today, for sure, we're going to be talking about Garden Expo that's coming up today, this afternoon, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. It starts, doesn't it, Lisa?
Sure does.
So we'll be doing that and taking your questions and comments as we move along. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. And go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, or even a photograph there. We love to see those photos as well. And Lisa, you're going to be pretty active at Garden Expo, are you not?
I'll be there Saturday. I'll be in our Garden Expo booth with the Cooperative Extension team. And Brian Huddleston will be there, Phil Pelletieri, people from the Soils Labs and so on. And I'll be giving two talks during the day as well.
Yeah, so that's great. And of course, I'll be there as well.
And of course, Shelley.
Shelley Ryan will be there, and we'll be doing something at 10 in the morning. And then I'll be at our exhibit, our booth at 11 o'clock. So come on out. Say hello. We'll be there. I've got a bunch of people a little later on in the show. We'll talk about who else is going to be at our Wisconsin Public Radio booth, because we have quite a few people there as well. What kind of questions? Are you getting anything much from people these days?
Well, what we're mostly getting right now is people calling about our Master Gardener program.
Ah.
We're starting that up on February 21st for the Tuesday morning folks, and Wednesday evening starts the 29th. So we're getting a lot of questions about what the Master Gardener program is about and when the classes are starting. But
are you full or?
Nope, not yet. So encourage people to call in. This is a community volunteer training program that we train you in horticulture, and then you volunteer back to the community a certain number of hours. And people really enjoy it. I really enjoy working with the Master Gardener volunteers, and it's a lot of fun.
So contact you or go online, I suppose, the Dane County?
Yeah, Dane County Extension website.
Yeah, and there you go. And my guess is that throughout the state, this is going to be happening in many other counties as well.
Right. We're all on different schedules. So some people have them in the spring, some people have them in the fall. And it's kind of nice that way, in that if you are near, you know, to the borders of a number of different counties, that you can
have your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Well, Diane at Plymouth has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about starting onions from seeds. Usually when I start them, I use seed starting mix, and I plant them in like a mushroom,
mushroom compost?
Well, no, it's just a box I get at the grocery store that, and I use that for my container. So I have a big bunch of onions all in one container.
I see.
And then once they're up, I'm wondering, should I be transplanting those to different soil like I do with other plants that I start from seed, or should I just be feeding it? Because, they're all little onions and they're hard to transplant. I wasn't sure what to do then.
Right. What I would do is wait until the bulbs are a little bit bigger, at least pea size, if not more than that, and then putting them out in the garden.
And
you can also direct seed them into the ground.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so I can just leave them in the soil starter and then go to the garden from there.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't bother with unless you have them very, very close together, in which case they might start, impeding each other's growth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Diane, for calling. Wendy in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Wendy. Wendy, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost Wendy.
We got a Julie.
We got a Julie. Let's try Julie out. Let's see here if we can get to Julie. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. My question is, I like to plant lots of zinnias, and this spring, summer, instead of planting them in rows, I've got like little 4x4 foot plots, square plots, where I had potatoes last year, and I'm wondering how they'll do after potatoes. Plus, I put in old age manure, kitchen scraps, and then I covered it with lots and lots of old straw. And I'm wondering, when should that be taken off in the spring so the soil can warm up?
Okay, you're in Eau Claire, right?
Right, south of Eau Claire.
Okay. Well, according to the new USDA map, you've moved a zone. It's gotten warmer again, and so you could probably do that about the same time that we would in Madison. I'd say something like middle of May to take the
materials
leaves
off,
and then about the 20th or 25th or something, you can put in your seeds.
Yeah. My mom always, she's an old timer, and she always says, wait till the way end of May and they'll catch up.
Yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, it's gotten a little warmer since then, but it's not a bad idea. I always advise people to go later rather than earlier.
They always catch up because usually you always get a little cold spell, even if it's been warm for a long time.
Yep. So. Okay, your mom's a wise woman.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Jill and Madison, we are turning to you now. Hi, Jill.
Hello. I had a question about tomatoes. I had, last couple years, I've had some different things. I think two summers ago, I had it was my potatoes and tomatoes, kind of that rot that I
guess, late blight?
Yeah, I think so. That was like the Irish potato family.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Nasty.
Yeah, it was bad. And then last year, I had what I self-diagnosed and had confirmed as anthracnose on my tomatoes, which is very interesting. But anyway, to make a long story short, I'd still like to grow tomatoes. I was told by the gardener I spoke with not to plant tomatoes in that area for like 2 to 3 years, which is fine with me, but I have very little space in sun in my yard. I have like a 7x14 garden, and I could maybe find a little patch here or there of sun at other places in my yard, but I'm wondering how far away from the infected plants do I need to stay? I mean, like 10 feet, 20 feet, you know?
Yeah. I think I would advise you to plant in pots.
Okay.
For a couple of years. Okay. If your sun is limited, because some of those organisms are soil borne.
Okay.
Stay away from it.
Yeah,
it's hopefully things like late blight and late blight is not supposed to be overwinterable here because of the temperatures, but you know, USDA, it's been pretty mild, and we haven't seen many problems with it in Dane County this last year. We didn't have any reports. But the septoria and anthracnose and so on could be in leaf litter or in the organic matter in the soil. So since you have limited light area, I would just put them in pots. You can use whiskey barrels. You can use 5-gallon pots.
Okay.
Be sure with tomatoes, especially the indeterminate types that keep growing and growing, that you have good support for them and you have a decent-sized pot.
Okay, that sounds. And just one other quick thing. In my shaded yard, I have big old spruce trees, and they're pretty old. They're 40 or 50 years old, so they're kind of thinned out.
Sure.
Is it dangerous to plant anything close to them? I mean, because there is some sun, because they're so sparse now that
no, that should be fine.
Oh, that should be okay.
They'll compete for water.
Yeah.
There's nothing about the spruce needle or any kind of like pine needle, because I have pine in my yard too. Nothing like that that's going to hurt my plants.
Oh.
Nothing? Okay. Great.
No.
Nah. There you go.
Happy little gardener.
Yeah. Sound like the little guy is wanting some attention. Let's put it that way. Thanks again, Jill. Mary Lou in Monroe. It is your turn. Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi. I am so psyched because my whole adult life I've tried to garden way up in northern Wisconsin. And between the coldness and the sandy soil and the short season, it's been real difficult. Then the last 10 years, I've lived in Florida, so I haven't had an opportunity to garden very much down there. Now, this summer, we just bought a farm in Monroe.
Oh, cool.
So I am so eager to get out and get my garden going.
Well, don't go out today.
No, but I'm chomping at the bit.
Yes.
My question is, we're lucky enough to have 8 acres. Some of it is lawn, some of it is pasture, some of it is whatever I can use for garden space.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, to get started on the right foot, on the right track, what suggestions do you have for me to get going? I've been listening about lasagna gardening. My son just bought a tiller, and I'm thinking I'm just going to go till it up and get it going. What should I do first to make it right?
Okay, first of all, what kind of plants are you interested in growing?
Primarily vegetables.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what you should do is start out with a soil test and see what your fertility is, see what the texture of your soil is so that you can match the vegetables that you want to grow to the appropriate parts of your property. There may be some heavier soils in some areas that are more suited to some of the root crops and other areas where it's better drained, where other things might be better off. So I would suggest sending in a soil sample as early as you can in the spring and see what you're working with.
And where does that go to?
That goes to, well, there are two soil labs in the state. One is in Marshfield and one is here in Madison. And you can go online, and if you just Google or type in UW Soil Lab, it will give you all the information that you need, how to do the put the sample together, where to send it to, what the cost is. And also when you fill out the form, it'll ask you what you want to grow. And so it can then advise you on the appropriate fertilizers or organic matter fertilizers that you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd start with that. And it should also give you an idea of what your organic matter level is in your soil and whether you need to amend.
Okay. Now, I'm lucky enough to have inherited a donkey with probably 10 years' worth of donkey manure around. So I want to incorporate some of that into my mm-hmm. garden. I think that's a good idea. Any suggestions about using that?
Yeah, you want to make sure to use composted manure, not fresh manure.
Mm-hmm.
We do have on our Learning Store site, if you type in Learning Store, it will come up, UW Learning Store, and it has our publications. We have one on using manure appropriately in the garden, safely in the garden, and also adding organic matter and different organic products to use as conditioners for your soil.
Yeah, and it's great material. You want to use it properly.
Yeah, right.
Right, right. Okay, excellent. Right. And of course, pick a sunny location. So that's
exactly,
yeah,
yes,
exactly.
At least 6 hours.
And actually, there's a publication on growing vegetable gardening at the Learning Store,
there's
too.
There's tons of them.
Tons of stuff there. So really look around in there, Mary Lou, because there are a lot of good publications in there.
There's also one on home composting, and I would recommend the Master Gardener program, too, if you're an avid gardener. Look into what's available in your county.
That's definitely on my list.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Thanks, Mary Lou.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And lots of callers online here. Our guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Home Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. She's answering the phone. Doesn't she do a great job? It's fun to listen to her.
She does.
She does. And everybody who calls in will agree with that, I'm pretty sure. We're all here waiting for you to call at 1-800-642-1234 on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening into this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with Lisa Johnson. And we have an email from Brian in Schofield, who's interested in growing fava beans in his garden this year. Says he has sandy soil and would like to know how fava beans do in Wisconsin and what kind of soil fava beans prefer. I don't have any experience with growing them.
I have no experience with growing fava beans, unfortunately. I am thinking, though, that probably on the Learning Store site, there is probably something
almost for sure.
Let's see. I'm trying to think what other resources I could offer. We do have, there's a publication that Karen Delahoe had done on growing beans and other legumes, and I would bet that there's fava beans in there if they do well here. But sorry, you stumped me.
Yeah, we'll see. As the show moves along, I'll see if I can't find something up. So stay listening, Brian. And Judith, in her usual good fashion, has already put up on our Facebook page the Learning Store publications link to organic soil conditioners. So we've got that up right now. And if you want to learn some more about that, you can just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can take a look at it. No problem. Carolyn in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Carolyn.
Howdy-do.
Howdy-do.
Okay, I've been successful using corn gluten like years ago. It's like I put it in a to stop annual weed growth.
Mm-hmm.
It worked real well in a strawberry bed. Okay, I put in the corn gluten and then planted the strawberry plants. And the weeds didn't grow for a while. And I didn't keep up with it. Of course, the weeds came back.
They do that.
And I also controlled a bunch of garlic mustard where I pulled garlic mustard. I knew there were a lot of seeds in the dirt. And it did control the garlic mustard, you know, the seedlings. Well, anyway, but that was all quite a while ago. And I was going to use it again this year. But somebody gave me said there were some warnings about it. And I'm curious if you know of anything I should know about corn gluten.
Well, the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is that you obviously don't want to use it in an area where you're going to be putting seeds.
Right.
Because it would prevent the seeds from germinating.
Right.
Other than that, it is a natural product from the corn industry, and it I can't think of anything else that would cause a problem. You do have to be careful when you use it. Because timing is absolutely critical. If the seeds have already germinated, even underground where you can't see them by the time you put it down, then it won't have any effect. So it's critical to know the times that you should put it down and what you're trying to control. Obviously, it doesn't work on perennials that are already established.
Sure.
Right, or any annuals that are established.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, all right. Well, you don't know of any warnings.
Not safety warnings, but the product should be labeled with any of those cautions on it, if there are any.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Carolyn. Thank you for calling. And I should mention, actually, the folks at the Learning Store that put up that link to the...
growing beans?
Yeah, growing beans and peas in Wisconsin. We've got that.
I've got in the commercial production book, they don't list fava beans. I'm kind of wondering if they may have too long a growing season.
Well, they like growing. They like cool. They like cool climate. So I know that much.
I'm not sure.
We'll do some more thinking. Oh my goodness, Judith posted the photo of me holding. Oh my word, holding up our Garden Talk. What would you call this?
It's a plant marker. Yeah,
and it's got some seeds on it. And we're going to be giving these out. Judith, are we going to be giving these away? Yeah, we are. We're going to be giving these away at the booth, the Wisconsin Public Radio booth. During the Garden Expo.
They're a biodegradable stake, as I understand, and they've got a picture of Larry in Garden Talk, and when it's on, it's so cute, you kind of hate to have it biodegrade. And then on the other side, on the other side, it says basil, talks to you about basil, and it's got some basil seeds actually stuck onto the label. It's so cool.
Glued to the thing, and then apparently the glue, disintegrates, mm-hmm. and the seeds grow. So you got your own basil. So I will personally be handing out some of those on Saturday from 11 to 12. And Judith will be there from 10 to 12. She's there for a couple hours. She'll be handing them out, too. And that's, of course, at the Garden Expo at the Dane County Expo Center in Madison. It'll be a lot of fun, actually. Tom in Eastman, we are going to you. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I was questioning about cabbage plants. We've been having trouble for the last 2-3 years where our cabbage plants, the white cabbage, red cabbage, Brussels sprouts, are all rotting in the garden.
Okay. Can you describe the rot?
Well, it seems like it's more from the inside out.
Okay. Is it browning on the inside?
Well, I don't know if it's browning so much as it gets to be a slimy leaf.
Okay. So it's not, it's on the outer leaves then?
No.
No. Okay. On the inside of the cabbage then?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you had a soil test done?
No, not in a long time.
Okay. The coal crops, which includes, you know, the cauliflower and the cabbage and broccoli and so on, are all very sensitive to a lack of boron in the soil.
Boron?
Yeah. Also, they have requirements for copper and manganese. Now, these are all micronutrients, and so you don't need very much of them. But you do need a certain amount. I would recommend getting a soil test and checking for that. There are other diseases. So what you might want to do is get a soil test to check out that aspect of it. And I would also contact the Plant Disease Diagnostic Center in Madison and describe the disease or the type of rot and where it is and so on, because it could be a soil-borne disease as well. Do you rotate your plants?
Yes. Every year our crops are rotated.
Okay.
So it's at least one or two or three rows away from where it was the previous year.
Okay. Because there's one that's called black rot that is a bacterial disease. And if you've used any compost from plants that were affected by this, it can possibly overwinter. They do suggest a 3-year rotation and using black rot resistant cultivars. So when you buy seed, check on the packet to see if it is resistant to that. There's
What is this resistant to?
Black rot, but
okay,
there is
black rot.
Yeah, but there's also another one called Rhizoctonia that is a soil-borne rot disease as well. So there are fungicides that you can use, but for the bacterial, obviously, fungicide is not going to work because the bacteria is not the same thing as a fungus. But I would definitely contact the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in Madison on the campus there and talk to them and see which disease they think it might be.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Tom, for calling. Burl in Asheville, we are turning to you next. Hi, Burl.
Hi, good morning. For the first time last summer, discovered some rather large and beautiful worms on my tomato plants. Turns out that they're hummingbird moth caterpillars.
The tomato hornworm? Is that?
Yes.
Big green?
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Yeah, they are rather pretty. They eat a lot, though.
Well, that's two concerns. One, if they're allowed to stay on the tomato plant, will that somehow destroy the tomato plant?
They can eat a lot, especially if you have a number of them. If it's a large tomato plant, I doubt that they will, you know, manage to eat the whole thing unless you've got quite a number of them. If it's just one or two, you can, you know, let them develop if you're interested in that. Most people tend to get rather excited about them because they're, as you mentioned, rather large and do tend to eat a fair amount. But You know, it all depends on what your priorities are.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I'm just curious. Hopefully there's maybe another host plant so I could sort of find him a new home.
Let's see. They probably will eat other things in the Solanaceae family, potato and eggplant and so on, but I'm not positive about that.
Yeah, that's still up in the air.
Yeah,
we're not sure.
I think we may have a fact sheet about it. And
I can look it up at the Learning Store again. And our folks at the Learning Store are listening in. Maybe they can report for us on that. Thanks, Beryl, for calling. Lisa Johnson, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lisa Johnson, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. Lisa, we had a comment or a question on hornworms. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just checking out one of our garden fact sheets, and I was right, there is one on hornworms. And what they say is that, like we were talking about, usually they don't come in. Good heavens, how do you, murder of crows? I wonder, what is it, a herd of hornworms? Or
I don't know.
Not sure what you call
a group.
Yeah. Usually they don't come in large groups. However, each one can devour up to 4 times its weight in food each day. And usually they're noticed before they, you know, defoliate a tomato plant. But if it's a big plant, just one hornworm is not going to do it. They overwinter as pupa in the soil, and they come out in late June. And you'll see eggs they're just laid singly on the lower leaf surface of the tomato plants. Again, you usually don't have to use insecticides because there aren't that many of them. And often they are parasitized by parasitic wasps. So, but they are kind of neat. And the adult form is quite beautiful.
There we go. Let's turn to Bubba and Rhinelander next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Larry. How are you both doing?
Good, thank you.
All right.
Hey, I hate to tell you this, but after a lifetime of trying to grow vegetables up in northern Wisconsin and only be able to have the brassica family, you know, like cabbage and broccoli, be able to make it without getting hit by a frost, I just become so disenfranchised with trying to garden. I'm moving to Southwest Michigan. I'm serious. And because it's the hardiness zone here is zone 3.
Yeah.
Down there, it's a 5A, or 5B, 6A.
Mm-hmm.
And with this move, I would like to know if there's a palm tree that is cold tolerant to zone 6A, that you are aware of.
I doubt it.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Well, not any that I'm aware of.
Okay. The reason I ask is because I've seen it in some catalogs that say this palm tree is hardy to zone 5, but I'm really wary about those catalogs.
Yeah, I would be pretty wary myself.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, there are some palm trees that grow in Florida that withstand a frost, you know, or colder temperatures. But I'm not aware of any.
You might get one to live a year.
Yeah. Until winter.
You know, and then maybe it would survive a winter if we didn't have.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. It'd never make it for two.
Probably not.
That's probably true. Well, again,
it's a nice thought. But
it's a nice thought, and I thank you for your help. It was fun trying to garden up here, but I was just so disappointed so many years that I just have to move.
Well, you can still listen to us, you know, go online.
I know. I'll be streaming you all the time.
Thanks a lot, Bubba. Thank you very, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. All right. Well, we have Wendy in Eau Claire with a comment or question. Let's go there. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I got a question about Colorado potato beetles. Exactly. Last year, I noticed one of them, and it was in a full grown. It was on my potato plants. I grew the baby reds, some Yukon gold, and the blue potatoes. And they were all on the Yukon. Well, anyways, it was just a full. I left for the weekend, came back, and they spread like crazy. There was pupa on all of my potato plants. I know that there's no way to take care of them except for hand-picking them. Is that correct?
Well, for the home gardener, that's probably the best method. There are some other options, but that works about as well as anything. If you have a lot of potatoes that you grow and you've had these nasty guys in the past.
No, this is just last year, so that was my other question was, what can I do for, I'm afraid this year it's going to have the same problem, because they burrow.
Yeah, they do. They overwinter as adults in the soil, and typically they will be at the edges of your garden overwintering. What I was going to say is that you can dig a trench and line it with plastic, and any potato beetles, because they have to walk to get to your plants.
Sure.
So first of all, if you put those potato plants in the center of the garden, they'll have a longer way before they get there.
Right.
But the trench method lined with plastic is actually quite quite effective. Unfortunately, then you have to deal with dead potato beetles.
That's absolutely fine, as long as I get my potatoes. They ate all my leaves by the end of last season, and I was really worried about this year.
Yeah.
Where would they come from? I live right across the river from the community gardens, and I checked, and my local neighborhood gardeners haven't had the issue. I have no idea if they would have came from the compost. I use a chicken compost. Is that possible?
Well, I wouldn't say very likely, but I think probably the community garden is more likely.
They
may not know that they had it, or it could have. Let's see. Did you plant from potato sets, or how did you?
The spuds. I just cut them in quarters.
Okay.
But like I said, it was three different kinds of potatoes. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Not sure where that would have come from.
Yeah. But suggestions then for this season when I plant them, should I rotate the different? You know, like maybe put the reds in the blue, rotate the crop. Or put them where I have.
Certainly put the trench.
Oh, definitely.
And also, I would suggest if you can rotate them to a different part of the garden. That would be most useful.
Okay.
All right.
And then just watch for them.
They are horrible.
Yeah. The first generation is going to be those overwintered adults, and then they will lay eggs on the crop.
Mm-hmm.
And so keep flipping those leaves over and watching for them.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Wendy, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We have some questions. A Facebook question from Ron in Heartland. I was wondering what to do about the Japanese beetle. Last year, for the first time, I found three of them in my garden, and from the research I've done, each adult has about 50 offspring. If this is true, it won't be long before they're a big problem. Sounds like they like to eat everything. I found them eating marigolds, of all things. I never had anything eat marigolds before. What do you recommend to control Japanese beetle and the stink bugs that were in my garden also? I grow all kinds of fruits and vegetables.
Is this person in Middleton?
No, the person's in Heartland, Wisconsin.
Heartland. I wasn't aware we had the brown marmorated stink bug in Heartland. We do have brown marmorated stink bug in Middleton and on the east side of Madison. If the person suspects that they have the brown marmorated stink bug as opposed to our native stink bugs, they should send a sample in to Phil Pelletieri on the campus, because we're tracking where we're having those hot spots. that's a far worse pest, actually, than the Japanese beetle, which is no small
no bargain.
Yeah, no bargain in itself. So, okay, with the Japanese beetles, unfortunately, you're not going to like to hear this, but there is not a real good control for them. Because they have such a long season coming out in the Madison area, usually around the 25th of June up until the 1st of July, and then sticking around until usually September 1st, you would have to spray and spray and spray and spray. So we don't really recommend too much of that. If you are going to go the spray avenue, you can use neem oil, but you'll have to reapply it about every 4 days or so. We don't recommend growing grapes or raspberries where you have high populations of the Japanese beetle. And I should mention the stink bug also likes raspberries. Isn't that nice?
Mm.
With the Japanese beetle, we don't recommend the traps because research shows you bring in four times as many beetles as you would have had otherwise. Now, for trees that you're not, you know, growing for edible purposes, you can use the imidacloprid product, which one of the brand names is the Bayer Advanced Lawn and Garden Insect Killer that's in a blue jug or blue bag. You can ask at your local garden center to make sure you're getting the right product. So that's Japanese beetle. For the stink bug, so far we don't really have populations at the moment that are high enough to really do a lot of control on it, but it's also going to be a bear to try and control. So, again, do send the sample of the stink bug in to make sure it's not one of our native ones.
One of the things about Japanese beetles that Phil has said and pointed out is that what happens is they tend to build up.
Mm-hmm.
You've got them really bad for a couple of years, and mm-hmm. then they start to decline. And
yeah.
So there's some sort of natural control that comes in and kind of knocks them back, so that you don't have to expect that they're going to be with you forever in large numbers.
Mm-hmm. It may seem like forever,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, absolutely. Mary Ann in Waukesha, it is your turn. Hi.
Hi. I have some strawberries that keep... They're on the ground and they keep getting eaten off by chipmunks, so they...
Oh, that's rude.
I plan to put them up in hanging planters.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I bought some potting mix. But the only ingredients in the potting mix are bark, sphagnum moss, and mm-hmm. vermiculite. So that's not going to make very nutritious strawberries. So I have a choice of chicken manure mixed with straw or rabbit droppings. And I also have kitchen vegetable compost.
Okay. I would use the kitchen vegetable compost. What I would do is mix that about a third with the soilless mix that you got, the potting mix. I would not use the rabbit droppings. Let's see. What was the other one that you mentioned? Chicken? Chicken manure would probably be okay, but if it isn't,
it's got to be composted.
It's got to be composted because it's very high in ammonia and it can burn the plants. Also, you don't want to get your soil too heavy in any kind of pot, including a hanging pot. So that's why I'm saying about a third, mixing it about a third with your soilless mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the winter, can I just set these on the ground and cover them with leaves until spring?
If you have a good pile of leaves, I'm sorry, where are you from again? Waukesha?
Waukesha.
Yeah, that should be okay. Or if you have a shed that you can put them in, that would be all right too. Now, one problem you may have is if you have a lot of chipmunks hibernate over the winter, but if you have a lot of voles or mice, you do have to worry about them potentially getting into the pots under the leaves. So you may want to put chicken wire, or better yet, hardware cloth with the smaller mesh, so that they can't get in.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question for Lisa Johnson, our Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'd love to hear from you on that page. And Luba in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, thank you very much for calling.
Well, I have, maybe let's make it three questions. First of all, before I forget, you've got a Madison number and then you've got the 1-800 number, and I don't think you ever mentioned the Madison number.
Oh, we used to have the Madison number and now we only use the 800 number.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I can't remember the history of that, and I'm not sure why we eliminated the Madison number, but somewhere along the line it got eliminated.
Well, I still use the Madison number, but I was kind of curious as to why you didn't mention it. All right, that's out of the way. Now I have gardening questions. One is, I just planted some green onions, some white green onions. And I think it's really too early.
I think you're right.
So if I put it in a great big pot, what would be the depth of the pot?
Okay, green onions, you said?
The eating ones.
Yeah,
with the stems.
The problem is that they are going to, you know, you have to harvest those guys a little earlier so they don't get too big.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I would say at least a 6-inch depth pot for those.
Yeah.
If not
least.
8.
I think more like 8. But
yeah.
Okay. Well, that'll do. Well, then the seeds are not that expensive.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
And it may be more expensive to buy the pot than the soil.
Oh, a lot more expensive, to be perfectly honest, Luba.
All right. Now, the second question. I've always thought that scallions were like a green onion, except the bulb has a slightly pinkish color, and it tastes a bit like garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought a green onion was a green onion, the kind that you see it bunched in the store.
Right.
So I went and I bought these green onions, which were called scallions.
Oh.
And it said bunch. They said white.
Mm-hmm.
And it said bunched.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a difference between a green onion and a scallion?
Yes, as far as I know, there is a size difference, and as you mentioned, there's kind of a
taste difference
as well. The scallions are a bigger bulb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're used fairly similarly in cooking, but they are different species.
Okay, now, is there still sort of a white garlicky and a pink garlicky?
That I'm not sure of. I'll
have to call Young's because when they said bunched, I just didn't know, and recipes frequently call for scallions, and I never know whether they're really the pink scallions or just a plain old white.
You can probably substitute one for the other.
I have done that all the time. I do that all the time. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Okay, well, those are my questions.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And it's a good idea to call Jung's because they're always happy to help. When you've got a question, they will come up with an answer pretty quickly. We have an email from Margaret who has black-eyed Susan vines outside in the winter, outside in the summer, inside in the winter. Thunbergia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's thrived for years till this winter. Now it has white powdery stuff on the leaves.
Ah.
Sometimes a small circle, half inch or so, on an affected leaf dries out and turns brown. Reminds me of the spots I saw on the maple leaves this past summer. And what do you think this is? Anything we can do about it?
It's probably powdery mildew, and I am surprised that she hasn't had problems with that before, or aphids, or white flies. Often, plants that are brought in from the outside over winter do end up with some problems like that. There are various fungicides that you can use for that. I don't have a list of them right now, but if you call your local garden center and say that you have powdery mildew, which is what I'm assuming that it is, if it kind of rubs off with your, if you rub it with your fingers. Now, on the other hand, if it's white clumpy stuff, it might be mealybugs, which tend to be on the axles of the leaves, and you will see the adults moving slowly around. So if that's the case, then you need to use an insecticide.
Okay.
There it sounds like it's probably powdery mildew, though.
Yeah, I would agree. Tammy in Colgate, your turn. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I'd like to plant a lot of herbs, various herbs this summer, and I was wondering which herbs are best suited for pots versus just putting them out in the garden. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Herbs for pots would include some of the smaller ones that have smaller root systems. Rosemary does very well in pots. Oregano. I myself usually plant mint in pots, in bigger pots, because otherwise if you put it in the garden, it will take off and you'll have it forever and ever. So I do put mint in pots, but again, in larger size pots. Certainly chives can go in pots as well. One thing that doesn't go as well in pots is basil, because it has a bigger root system, and if the pot dries out, basil doesn't take to that terribly well, whereas the other ones that I've mentioned handle droughtier situations a bit better.
Iris in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Iris.
In Madison.
Yes.
I'm calling. Last summer, I grew some sweet corn, and some sort of beetle came onto them, and it was eating both the tassel at the top of the plant and then the tassel at the top of the cob, and then I had no kernels.
That's probably corn earworm, which is quite a big pest of corn. There's also corn borers that bore into the stalk. Lots, unfortunately, of different pests are problems with that. Let's see, cutworms too can be problems, but I think probably what you've got is the corn earworm. And there are pesticides that you can use for that. You can also use BT for that, which is a organic product. Definitely rotate where you've got your corn planted, because some of these will overwinter in the soil. Make sure that you've cleaned up your old corn stubble, because they can overwinter in the corn stubble. We do have a fact sheet on corn earworm at the Learning Store site, so I would check that out, too.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, Sarah on our Facebook page says the caller interested in growing palms in Michigan should check the book Palms Won't Grow Here by David Frankel. I love it.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great. Oh, man. Chuck in North Hudson, your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning. We have had a raspberry patch for a number of years, and it does quite well. And last year, we ended up with a good crop of black beetle that was all over the raspberries and eating the raspberries before I got to them.
Black beetles.
It could be picnic beetle. What size are these?
They're not very big. They're, I would say, an eighth to 3/16 of an inch long.
Okay, they may be the picnic beetles then. Did they have a red spot in the middle?
I thought I'm trying to remember if they had any spots on them, and they might have a spot on them.
Yeah.
Okay. Those typically are, if I remember right, cyclical in their population, that, you know, one year they're high and the next year they're not. I believe we have a fact sheet on them. Let's see here just a second. Picnic beetles, though, also have the nasty habit of they can be a problem with carrying oak wilt. Have oaks, you might want to manage for those guys.
But check our Learning Store. There may well be some information at the UW Extension Learning Store. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. And I hope if you are planning to visit the Garden Expo this weekend, Friday, it's this afternoon.
Yeah, four to nine,
I think it is. And then all day tomorrow and half a Sunday, mm-hmm. Sunday morning. I hope you'll stop by a couple of places, the UW Extension booth, of course. Lisa Johnson's going to be, you'll be doing a couple presentations.
On Saturday. Yeah, I'll be there on Saturday on and off and doing a couple presentations on Saturday.
And I did want to mention that we'll have Wisconsin Public Radio has a booth there. And we will, Judith and I will be there in the morning. I'll be doing an event on stage with Shelley Ryan from 10 to 11. And then from 11 to 12, and Judith, are you going to be there at 10 in our booth? No, she'll be there at 11, though. She will be there at 11. She'll be there. I'll be there. Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, is going to be there at 11.
Cool.
At noon, Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark come by. Then Scott Craven comes at 1 o'clock. He's telling me he's bringing some stuffed animals to show people. Steve Ziegler, principal of ZDA Inc., landscape
art. He's great.
Yeah, he'll be there at 2. So that's all on Saturday. Then Sunday, 10 in the morning, Stephanie Elkins, Wisconsin Public Radio Simply Folk host, will be there. 11 o'clock, Brian Huddleston. The Dr. Death, our plant disease guy.
And he'll be there the whole weekend in the Cooperative Extension booth. So,
yeah, as well. And Joy Cardine will be there at noon on Sunday. Doug Soldat from our turfgrass guy will be there at 1 on Sunday. Yeah,
he's wonderful, too.
And Liz Freemuth, the garden hole,
will
be there at 2 o'clock sharing her passion for gardening and healthy plants. So all at the radio exhibit. We got them.
Terrific.
We got them all lined up. So every hour on the hour, you can come back and see somebody new. And Chuck in Pewaukee, it is your turn. Let's go there. Hi, Chuck.
Hello. I have a problem where I planted a couple of cherry trees last summer into the fall. And by the time that the leaves were dropping off the trees, those leaves were basically cannibalized where it was just a skeleton remaining of the leaves.
Okay, was it Japanese beetles?
I couldn't see anything on the leaves themselves. A friend of mine suggested they might be leaf miners. Is that a possibility?
That's a possibility. So it was in, I'm trying to pinpoint when this happened during the growing season?
It was midsummer toward fall, and they also spread over to, I have several rose trees, and they began to lose the fleshy meat of the leaf, and it was just the skeleton of the leaf, if you will.
Okay. And you didn't see any caterpillars or beetles or anything?
I couldn't find anything.
Okay.
It was just kind of a mystery. Every day it seemed like there was more, of the matter gone off the leaves. And I don't know if those leaves were like that going into the winter. Is that going to kill that?
Probably won't kill it, no. I'm suspecting, since you didn't see anything, it's
slugs?
Probably flea beetles
I'm
thinking.
Yeah.
Because they're so small.
Right.
Even though they cause a lot of damage. Flea beetles or flea weevils, either.
Yeah.
I think probably flea beetle. We do have a fact sheet on that. I hadn't heard of them really attacking cherries, though. But I know that they do attack a wide variety of things. Did you look underneath the leaves at all?
I did, but I could not find anything that was...
That is weird.
Yeah.
They weren't trails that were kind of on the inside of the leaf?
No, they literally ate every
shot holes.
Piece of matter off of the leaf where it was just...
Just the veins were left.
Yeah.
Just the skeleton of the leaf.
It sounds a lot like Japanese beetle, but that...
But you'd see
those.
Yeah.
I mean, they're quite gregarious, and so I'm guessing at flea beetles. I would check with Phil Pelletieri though to check me on that diagnosis. There are a number of things.
My apple trees at all?
They didn't touch your apples because both roses and cherries and apples are all in the rose family, and they do often get munched by many things, but it's not as common with cherry leaves. Because
apple trees are on the other side of my property,
okay.
You know, probably some hundred some yards away.
Hmm.
But maybe they'll be migrating there this year. I'm worried, you know. But
yeah, I'd check with Phil and see whether he thinks that it might be flea beetles or not.
Yeah.
We also have a fact sheet on flea beetles that you might want to take a look at.
Yep. At our Learning Star. Good luck. Thank you, Chuck, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Jean and Glidden a chance to join in. Hi, Jean.
Hi. When we moved to our new house, the ground was red clay. So I thought I was going to be smart, and I got some skidder tires, and we cut the top out, and we filled them with soil from the farm. And it's done really well until last year. And the cucumbers and squash, the leaves turn gray and just disintegrate. So is my soil all of a sudden missing something? Because it's been quite a few years now.
Well, there are a number of things. Did the vines kind of wilt before they turned gray?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Okay. All right. There are a number of things that could be going on. Usually when you see the graying, it could be powdery mildew, but we also have a downy mildew now. I'm not sure, though, that it's up in your part of the state yet. I would be a little suspicious of the soil if you haven't been rotating. It could be there's a bacterial wilt that can cause the wilting, but there's also the squash vine borer. Which will attack both cucumbers and squash, and it bores in right at the base of the stem, and often you'll see some frass, which is the polite way of saying insect poop, and it looks kind of like sawdust.
Oh.
So did you see any holes at all in the bottom of the stem?
No,
or?
And no bugs. I didn't see anything like
okay.
that.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it isn't squash squash bug then, because those guys, boy, when you get those are everywhere. But the squash vine borer, because the larva is on the inside of the plant,
sure.
Messing around with the vascular system, which causes the wilting because of the feeding of that larva, you don't always see those. So what I would do, I guess, is I would use different soil. And don't put them in the same tires.
Okay.
And put them somewhere 20, 30 feet away from where you were growing your squash and cucumbers last year.
Okay.
And see if that makes a difference. Also, when you buy your seeds, check to see that they are resistant to some of the more common cucurbit diseases. And if you do see those symptoms again next year, especially the gray material, you can send a sample in to Brian Huddleston to see whether it might be powdery mildew. We typically see powdery mildew on cucurbits at the middle to end of the season, not usually the beginning of the season. And downy mildew, again, about the same time. With downy mildew, you'll see fuzzy stuff underneath the leaves. With powdery mildew, it's on top of the leaves.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck.
Good luck with that.
Thanks very much for calling. You know, I want to go back to Garden Expo for just a minute because it is so much fun. It is it's a great place to go. It's going to be cold. Going to be cold this weekend, so it's probably the perfect time.
It's the Garden Expo. The weather always.
But it's a perfect time to go to that and see all the plants and everything. And I wanted to get the times right because today Garden Expo is going from 4 to 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday it's 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then on Sunday it's 10 a.m. to 4.
Oh, okay.
10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
4 p.m.
So I said in the morning for Sunday, but really it's 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have all of the exhibits and all the seminars and everything going on.
Yeah, if you haven't been to the seminars, you really should go because the seminars you don't have to pay extra for along with your ticket. Now, they also have workshops where you can learn to do make all kinds of crafty things, art-based things, but also just all kinds of stuff.
It's really a lot of fun, and it smells great, and it's just, you know, it just puts you in the mood for gardening.
Yeah, it sure does.
That is for sure. So that's this weekend, and again, we'll be there. I'll be talking with Shelley on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and then I'll be at our Wisconsin Public Radio booth along with Judith at 12, from 11 to 12, excuse me. Valerie in Honey Creek, it is your turn. Hi, Val.
Hello. I received a hyacinth bulb in a vase from my sister-in-law at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And I know that the bulb was forced if it was blooming at Christmas. And I'd like to plant it outside in the fall to get it back on its regular schedule so it blooms next year. How would I store it?
Okay. First of all, if it's already made roots for you, you should plant it in a pot.
Okay.
And not let those roots die back, but put it outside in the spring, and then it will bloom for you next spring.
In 2013?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Should I water that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Treat it like a house plant until it goes outside. You may see some dieback of the leaves. That's okay. If that happens, just pull back on the water a little bit. You don't want it to dry out completely. And then just plant it outside as soon as the weather cooperates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Val.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi there. My question is about a climbing rose. 6 years ago when we moved into our home, there was a climbing rose that had developed, you know, quite healthy foliage but never bloomed. So the second year, we had a landscaper dig it up because it hadn't bloomed. The third year, it came back. It didn't bloom. So I'm ashamed to say I hacked it down and dug it up. The fourth year, it came back and didn't bloom, and I hacked it down and dug it up, and my husband went to war with it and put Roundup on it. Last year was the fifth year, and it bloomed.
White?
And that's fabulous, but...
White flowers?
Red flowers.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Right.
I'm amazed.
I was amazed, too. It's like the monster rose bush. But my question is that it also last year seemed to have sent shoots out, which traveled underneath our lawn and into a flower bed across the lawn 15 to 20 feet away. Now, I don't mind keeping the original rose bush, but I really am not interested in having this rose bush crop up all over the lawn.
It might have come up from seed, actually. I can't imagine it would have gone that far, unless, of course, it is multiflora rose. The reason that we were asking about white flowers is the behavior of this plant is sounding much more like multiflora rose than your average rose bush. Multiflora rose is an invasive species.
Nasty thing.
Yeah, and unfortunately was used as a rootstock for a lot of grafted roses. And because this plant was already there when when you moved there, I'm suspecting that it might have been grafted onto that. However, the flowers are white, not red. So I'm not real sure what you've got going there, but obviously it is producing viable seed. And if you've got shoots coming up around it and seeding, you know, going on 15, 20 feet away, you might want to resume your battle. It would be interesting, though, if you let it flower next year, if you send us a picture or send your local extension agent a picture, be interesting to find out what it is, if we can identify it at all.
Yeah.
May not be able to, but...
Be well worth trying to.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Stephen Appleton, we are turning to you. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I got a question, maybe two, about one about soil mixtures to start seedlings. What would be a good mixture?
What I usually recommend is a product like Jiffy Mix. There are a number of different seed starting mixes. Generally, they are a ground vermiculite. And the reason that I recommend that sort of product that's labeled as a seed starter is because it's very fine textured, and especially if you have small seeds, they aren't going to sink into the bottom of the pot. It's very lightweight, and so it has also very good water holding capacity, but also because it's light, there is good oxygen availability. And so that's what we use for our seed starting for the our teaching garden here in Madison.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Steve. Thank you very much for calling. Bob in Muscadet. Your turn. Hi, Bob.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I have a question about, I have all sand where I'm located. And in establishing a garden, I'm wondering to put bags of the full bags of organic fertilizer down and leave the packaging on, and poking holes through it for drainage, and then cut the top open and put seeds in there for like a nitrogen-loving plants like cucumber, squash, cantaloupe, things like that.
What kind of organic fertilizer are you? Are you talking about like compost or?
Yes, composted organic fertilizer.
Okay, so cow manure or leaf mulch or something like that?
Yes.
Okay, and you're wanting to put vegetables into that?
Yes.
Okay. I think it would be okay for something like peppers that have a fairly small, you know, root zone, or radishes or lettuce or something like that. Something like tomatoes or squash that have a really large root area, one bag probably isn't going to do it. You'd need at least a 5-gallon pot, if well, probably more than that, to be able to get a tomato up. Otherwise, that sounds fine that's a relatively easy thing to do. You don't have to build a bed or anything like that.
I was thinking about eventually I want raised beds and then put these in locations where eventually, and at the end of the season, pull the plants up, put them in the compost pile, and then just leave the soil there and eventually build my frame around it. And finally, in the end, after a couple of years, have some soil that I can plant directly into it.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. Now, if you don't get, are you using transplants or are you growing from seed?
No, because of our shortage of season, I think it's going to be transplant.
Yeah, okay, good. If you find that they aren't growing very well, it could be because the organic product is too heavy. If that happens, then mix in some peat moss the next time around.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Email from Alice in Elkhorn, who lives in Walworth County in southern Wisconsin, like to grow Honeycrisp apple trees, wondering where you could get the trees. You need two trees to secure target pollination.
Yes, yes. Apple trees are not self-fruitful, so you do need preferably two different cultivars even.
Yeah.
And of course, they have to bloom at the same time, because if you don't get blooming at the same time, there's no pollination, no pollination, no fruit. I have seen Honeycrisp offered in a number of different catalogs. We were talking about Jung's earlier. Mm-hmm. I think they have it. I should warn you, though, that Honeycrisp is a bit difficult for growing and storage, because it has some micronutrient issues that can make it calcium issues. And, well, that's not a micronutrient.
No.
That's a macro. So sometimes you get brown spots on the inside, and they can be a little bit more difficult to store. But they certainly are a lovely
yeah.
apple.
Yeah.
And if you want apples that maybe you don't have to spray as much, you might want to look into some of the disease-resistant ones, such as Enterprise or Freedom or Pristine, etc. But yeah, they are available. They're out there.
And Danny has a Facebook question. Daughter's really excited to grow strawberries in our home garden this summer. Recommendation on June bearing versus ever bearing versus day neutral in Dane County?
Yeah, the short season ones, which are the June bearing ones, Sparkle's a very nice variety. Jewel is a very nice variety. Those are some of the easiest to grow.
Mm-hmm.
The day neutral and the everbearing also do very nicely. So if you really like strawberries and you want to extend your season, I'd suggest using a mix of all of them. I've grown TriStar before, which I'm trying to remember whether that's day neutral or everbearing. And that's a very nice variety. Boy, there are so many out there that are so good.
And could Linda compost her kitchen scraps outdoors in the winter, either in her compost tumbler or in her compost pile?
Sure, you can.
Yeah.
It's not going to decay very much until spring. It's just going to freeze. But sure, if you want to get a jump on it and get the stuff out of your kitchen and not have to run it down the disposal, I'd say go for it.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, don't use meat, though, or any fats or bread-type products. That's not recommended.
Always a pleasure, Lisa. And you're here, and you're tomorrow again at the Garden Expo?
I'm there Saturday, yep. I may be in and out of the booth. I've got a presentation at 2 and another one at 4. So,
okay. And what are you going to talk about then?
My first talk is about hostas and friends, so mm-hmm. companion plants with hostas. And the second one is about butterfly gardening.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for coming by, and we'll see you this weekend for sure. See you Saturday. Tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, tomorrow already.
Tomorrow already, and I'll be there. Judith will be there. We'll be at the Wisconsin Public Radio exhibit. I've got an event with, and I think it's in rooms 5 and 6 at the Garden Expo, where I and Shelley Ryan and Phil Pelletieri and Neil DeBoel and a whole bunch of us will be talking about 20 years of Shelley's program. So that's going to be a lot of fun, too. So you, and come by for that. And thank you all very much for listening. Appreciate it. We'll talk about chocolate on Monday with Gail Ambrosius.
Ooh.
Here on the Ideas Network.